A CDC panel voted this week that the first doses of a forthcoming COVID vaccine should go to two of the most high-risk groups first, healthcare workers and nursing home residents. There are millions of long-term care facility residents nationwide. Is your loved one in a home? What has it been like in the pandemic? Are you a CNA in an assisted living or nursing home? How is staffing? It's 800-642-1234. Conversation right here, 800-642-1234. Helen Marks-Dix is the Associate Director for AARP Wisconsin and their Director of State Issues Advocacy. Helen, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
Well, nursing homes have been ground zero for COVID, more than 100,000 deaths nationwide as of last week. What do we need to do?
Well, we need to do something pretty desperately. Nursing homes represent 1% of the population and 42% of the deaths from COVID. And Wisconsin started out, we were doing pretty good, but boy, it's gotten out of control in the last 6 weeks, and it's just getting worse.
So as you look at this dashboard and you look at these worsening numbers, how is staffing? What do you see there among the staff?
Well, staffing is pretty bad. We, unfortunately, here in Wisconsin, we're having a staffing crisis prior to the beginning of the pandemic. We underpay people that work in nursing homes and assisted living pretty significantly. And so we had been dealing with a crisis in staffing in nursing homes prior to the time the pandemic started. And then it got worse during the pandemic, and it's bad for a couple of reasons. It's very hard to be caring for people in crisis situations. And you get more money and you get less stressful working conditions by going to work for Walmart or for Quick Trip or for a fast food place down the road. So there's no real incentive except love of this work for people to be doing this kind of work. And then to make it worse, you're exposed to the pandemic yourself. Staffing has gotten so bad in Wisconsin, we are now allowing COVID-positive staff to work if they're symptom-free.
Mm. How often are direct care staff contracting the virus? Do we have any data on that?
We do. Staff is, I'm looking at my little charts here. We are showing that staff cases of COVID are very, very high because the staff goes out in the community, and we have very high, Wisconsin is one of the crisis states right now of having very high infection rates in the community. Staff is in the community, goes into the nursing home. Our staff COVID cases is significantly above the national average for nursing home staff.
Facilities had to cut off family visits months ago. What is the status of that? Have visits resumed? What's allowed in Wisconsin?
We are not allowing visitors at this point. And what's happening is we have been encouraging, and the department has been encouraging, people to do virtual visits and window visits so that you can actually see people. There's a big problem with not getting visitors for a couple of reasons. One, of course, is social isolation. But the other is we also do not have the ombudsman and the surveyors going in to make sure what the conditions are in those nursing homes and that people are receiving the care and treatment that they are entitled to in spite of the staffing shortage. So I'm hearing from other places. I have not heard this in Wisconsin yet. But I'm hearing reports of significant problems with neglect and modified care for people in nursing homes because there's nobody keeping an eye on this situation.
We are talking about the situation in nursing homes. Helen Marks-Dix is State Issues Advocacy Director for AARP Wisconsin, looking at the situation. Is your loved one in a home? Have you been able to visit? How are they doing? Do you work at a long-term care facility? What do you need? Are you in a staffing shortage? Conversation here is 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up ahead with Helen Marks-Dix here on the Ideas Network. More than 100,000 residents and staff of long-term care facilities have died from COVID as of last week. That's according to the Kaiser Family Foundation's most recent analysis, and they say it's likely an undercount. Is there enough testing, PPE, and staff to cover shifts at your facility? 800-642-1234. Helen Marks-Dix is the Associate Director for AARP Wisconsin, and she stays with us. Let's take a call now. Michelle is with us from Wanakee. Hi, Michelle. What can you share?
Hi. My partner's father died from COVID in a nursing home. And I just wanted, I'm an RN and I do home care. So I'm in a different situation, but I didn't catch the last speaker's name, but she mentioned that it's very hard to get staff and then mentioned that, you know, the patients aren't getting the care that they should be getting. And then said it was due to like not enough supervision or not enough eyes on the patient. And I found it kind of ironic that she said that, you know, there needs to be more supervision as opposed to there needs to be more nursing staff available so that people can actually do what they're supposed to be doing. But we have to cut corners because there's not enough staff and you can't do everything.
You're saying that staffing is the root of the problem here. Helen, what can you say there?
Well, I'm sorry if I offended this nurse because I didn't mean that. I think that we have very professional and very good staff within nursing homes. We just don't have enough of them. And one of the ways that you get the administration not to cut corners and not to nickel and dime people out of doing a good job is having outsiders come into nursing homes, family members, the ombudsman, and other people to make sure that the staff is being allowed the resources and the ability and the time to do the kind of job that I believe they want to do and are capable of doing. So there was no disparagement meant towards any of the staff in nursing homes when I said that a lot of things aren't happening because there's just not enough staff to do the level of care and the quality of care that you need.
Michelle, thank you. Let's bring in Marie now in Madison. Hi, Marie.
Hi. I'll make like a quick question. My husband had a catastrophic stroke. He's been in different nursing homes, but this time he's staying in one. The thing that I'm having issues with is because the family can't go see him, or we have to make an appointment now to see him through a window. The thing is, my husband can't communicate. And the biggest worry that we have is that, you know, being there to advocate for him and knowing that he's supposed to be getting the care that he's supposed to be having. But the question here is, I've talked to people that work in the nursing home that has had the COVID, and even though they're health professionals, and they go home to their loved ones, it concerns me that are they really taking precautionary care to make sure that they don't bring home COVID from their loved ones back to the nursing home? Because my husband would be considered very susceptible. And the other thing, sorry, I'm going to add this on real fast, is that I'm finding out that the nursing home that he is in, they're having problems, and I'm finding that out through the newspapers.
Oh, dear.
Instead of telling me.
So multiple issues that Marie wants to bring up, Helen, and certainly with communication and a lack of clear communication.
Well, I think there's a couple of things I'd like to share. In our state, the Department of Health Services does post on their website what nursing homes they're investigating because there's active cases of COVID. So that's one thing. In some states, they're not even disclosing where the nursing homes have COVID cases. So it's at least knowledge. It's not very reassuring if your nursing home is on that list, but if it isn't, that's one reassurance. The other thing is, let's not underestimate the professionalism of the social work staff in nursing homes. And, you know, sometimes they are a good source of communication. And we have to do something pretty old fashioned, I think, these days, which is, since we're having trouble communicating, we need to go back to cards and letters and things that people can hold in their hands to feel connected to their families. It's not as satisfying as a two-way communication, but we have to use every trick in the book to make people feel connected.
How do you feel about residents of nursing homes being first in line as vaccines roll out?
Well, I think that's a good public health decision. Because there's such a high rate of death, when you think about who's in nursing homes, there are people that are both old and have another condition. And so there's a very high rate of death once these people get COVID. And so if we could get COVID under control in nursing homes, it would take the pressure off the hospitals because they would not be getting to that level or getting COVID, and they wouldn't need that level of care. I think breaking the logjam in hospitals that are over-pressured right now would be helpful for the whole community so that other things that need to go on in hospitals could be done. So I think prioritizing healthcare workers and residents of long-term care facilities was a very good idea.
Helen, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. And I'd like to make a last-minute pitch and just say, send cards to people in nursing homes. And if you don't know any, send them to the social worker at the nearest nursing home.
And we have to stop there on the Ideas Network. We have U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin on the line to discuss the status of the emergency federal relief stimulus and whether there are any signs of Congress coalescing around the size and the shape of the aid as the economy worsens and COVID becomes more concerning, more dire by the day. What relief do you, your family, your business, your livelihood need right now? What do you want to ask Senator Baldwin? Conversation right here. It's 800-642-1234. Again, conversation is here, 800-642-1234, as we get Senator Tammy Baldwin on the line. Senator Baldwin, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, it's a delight to join you.
So we heard yesterday the group of your colleagues in the Senate proposed a $908 billion relief bill. What are the chances that will pass and be signed into law before the end of the year?
Well, I will say it's picking up momentum and endorsements, and there's a fair amount of agreement that this bipartisan effort provides the appropriate framework for moving forward. Really, a lot of the answer to that question lies in the hands of Mitch McConnell. He is the one who holds the power to decide what will come before the Senate for debate. And thus far, he has not indicated that he'll bring this measure up. But I think pressure is mounting. And all of us who hear regularly from our constituents know how necessary this is at this point. We are seeing so many programs that were stood up in the CARES Act, which was passed in March of this year. These programs expire. Some have already expired, but others expire at the end of this month.
Yeah.
And we just can't afford to have, you know, greater suffering than already has been imposed by this horrible pandemic.
Well, let me ask you this. The Republican narrative that we hear is that the economic recovery is strong enough to need only a smaller scale aid relief package. Are Democrats overdoing it here, putting in way too much money than necessary to keep the nation whole?
You know, first of all, if you are on unemployment right now because you've, you know, the small business you work for has closed, or, you know, you're a gig worker, that sort of thing, those benefits expire at the end of December. In fact, the day after Christmas.
And I think it's hard to argue that they should no longer have any sort of unemployment insurance protections, given the fact that this pandemic has gone on much longer than was anticipated back in March when the CARES Act was passed. But we also know from the record hospitalizations that are occurring and the struggles that we've seen with budgets at the municipal level, that communities are really having to make, enormously tough decisions like laying off frontline workers because their budgets don't allow them to do the frontline response to the pandemic and everything else all at once. So I think it's definitely necessary. And then I add to that yesterday's testimony before the Senate Banking Committee by the Fed chairman and other economists who say, Congress needs to do more, not less, if we're going to avoid a massive second recession.
But you have governors pleading with Congress, saying states need financial help. They need it now. We're coming to the end of the year. Do you agree a smaller relief package is better than nothing?
Well, I certainly agree that this framework that has been put together on a bipartisan basis in the Senate is a framework we should deal with in order to get relief before the end of the year. It's dramatically smaller than the HEROES Act that was passed in May in the House but never taken up in the Senate. But it is larger than the proposal from Majority Leader McConnell that didn't provide any assistance to cities and states. There was no local government funding in that proposal. So I think this strikes a compromise. It is a result of compromise. And I think Mitch McConnell would be very wise to put on to bring it before the Senate.
If you're just joining us, we have U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin on the line. Let's take a call now. Cole is with us from Sun Prairie. Hi, Cole. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm glad to talk to you directly, Senator Baldwin. I have a question. In a hypothetical situation where the Democrats lose the runoff seats in Georgia and Republicans hold control of the Senate, would you be in favor or support of having Vice President-elect Kamala Harris, when they are inaugurated, take over presiding over the Senate as it had originally intended to be? It seems like the Speaker or the leader of the Senate has become a formality more so. And if that continues, then we definitely will see gridlock with meaningful stimulus and legislation. So I'd be curious to know whether you would support having Kamala Harris take over the original role in the Senate as vice president that would be able to bring forth whatever legislation needed to be brought.
Cole wondering about ushering forth legislation. Senator Baldwin.
Well, I will say that there's a very robust discussion going on right now before those two elections that remain in Georgia on January 5th. It's a bipartisan discussion about how to move more legislation and have more debates on the Senate floor. And I've been encouraged by that. I don't know that it would make much of a difference who presides over the Senate in terms of moving legislation. It really is decision of the majority leader, whoever that might be. But what we're trying to figure out is there a way we can bring bipartisan legislation that's been considered in committees and had favorable bipartisan votes that we can ease that sort of legislation getting to the floor and having debates, which has really stalled in these last couple of years. And it's been there's been consequences. You know, we came to the Senate because we wanted to make progress for the people we represent. And anyhow, there's a great history written of of who presides over the Senate. And certainly the Vice President of the United States has the authority to do that. But I really think it's Senate rules that need to be looked at in order to move legislation.
I want to touch here on the vaccine rollout. Health leaders are saying it could take $8 billion to get vaccines to the public. Will Congress allocate this?
Well, if we pass the COVID relief legislation that we were just discussing, there is an allocation in that measure to assist the states with getting the vaccine out in phases to, at first, the highest risk individuals, and then ultimately we know that we want to have the vast majority of our citizens receiving that vaccine. And while some of the logistics are already, contemplated and paid for, states do need additional relief, as do localities, in order to do this properly and quickly.
The National Guard has been critical in testing, being the one for specimen collection, keeping these sites running. We know that funding is set to expire on December 31st. Will Congress support President Biden, who pledges to refund federal funds for the Guard?
So right now, this is a matter that lies in the hands of President Trump. Congress does not provide the orders that would allow the Wisconsin National Guard and other states' National Guards to do this testing and for the federal government to pay for it. That's really a decision that lies with President Trump. Right now, on December 31st, federal funding for the Wisconsin National Guard will expire unless the president acts now. And what we don't want to see is a one-month gap in early January, where there's no federal funding for the National Guard. As you know, and as you said, President-elect Biden has pledged to extend the funding for the National Guard. But unless President Trump acts, we will have a gap between December 31st and January 20th.
One more thing I want to get to. Over the next 8 days, Congress has to deal with passing a $1.4 trillion annual spending bill to fund government. The stopgap measure expires on the 11th. Are you concerned about missing the deadline or the likes of a partial government shutdown?
Well, I will say that a lot of progress was made with our appropriations measures over the Thanksgiving holiday. And every report I've heard suggests that we're well on our way to present an omnibus. I think the questions that remain are whether we would combine it with a COVID package or whether we would pass two bills separately.
Would you be in support of COVID relief rolling into that annual spending bill?
I would have no objection to that. However we can get it across the finish line, I think we got to do it.
Senator Baldwin, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That was U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin, a Democrat from Wisconsin. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.